Welcome to the Profiling Criminal Minds Coronavirus Check-In. I'm Dan.
And I'm Sheila.
And we're back! I know it's only been a week, but I felt the need to be big about it. Oh, what a week, though.
And you were on vacation.
I was on vacation. I didn't really check the news for a couple of days, and it got bad this week, everybody.
Well, I don't know. I mean, to be perfectly frank, I'm Please? Just going, why are we even bothering? It's such
As America seems to like just spiral down this, this hellhole where it's like the whole country is caught in this tailspin, right? And they not only can't seem to pull out of it, but half of them don't even understand that they're in a tailspin.
Well, it's bizarre world.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only thing you can call it. Like, I just sort of sit there and go, well, yeah, okay. I just don't want it coming here, but it just might come here. I don't know. It's a peculiar people... have such peculiar ideas.
But well, it can't be comfortable living next door to America the way you do.
No, it's not.
Like, that's got to be freaky. Because here's a true fact. I know people mostly come here for facts to this show for facts about Canadian history and politics, and we're glad to provide them. That was only half sarcastic, I hope. fun fact, this is a true thing about Canada. Right. Our capital used to be Kingston, and that's why it's called Kingston. Kingston, Ontario used to be our capital. And I mean, it was before we were Canada. It was back when we were the Dominion of Canada, which was just a part of England, one of their colonies. But there was a capital city, right? It's where the governance was done from.
Canada, and then the province of Ontario. It's very complicated. Exactly.
It is deeply convoluted. We don't have to explain it all. But this is the important part of the story that I think people will hopefully enjoy. So the true fact is we had it there for the longest time. And then America decided to attack in the War of 1812. And they were, soundly defeated. It was a really brutal loss that the Americans suffered in the War of 1812. The thing that part of American exceptionalism that they don't understand is that America's really bad at winning wars.
Well, like, just let it go, Dan.
I'm just saying in passing. Like, historically, when America's in a world war, it does okay. But the rest of the time, it's either they lose or they tie. America is just not good at winning wars historically. They're very bad at it.
Well, they... There's a lot of reasons for that.
Yes. Yeah. So what happened was, after that, they're like, oh my God, we cannot trust these Americans. We have to get as far away. We have to get the capital as far away from America as possible while still being on a river for purposes of trade and communication. And that is why Ottawa got picked.
Yeah.
Because Toronto was still way too close. I mean, everyone can look at a map and say, why isn't Toronto the capital? And that's a good question. And the answer is, it's too close to America. Yeah. And they just didn't feel safe with the capital being right there across a lake from America. Because they could imagine, a bunch of people in Buffalo, New York, putting together a giant fleet of boats and just attacking the capital of Canada. They didn't want that to be an option. So they put the capital in Ottawa, which is very, very, very far from the border.
Yes.
Without being, the woods.
Yeah, it is far from the, it is sort of far from the, yes, the border. It's what we call, you would say it has a margin of, the Americans were coming in, you could do some prep stuff.
It's an extra fact that they literally put our equivalent of the Capitol building, Parliament, they put it on top of a cliff just to be extra safe and make sure it was defensible. They put it on a cliff so high that cannons couldn't hit it.
Yeah, well,
That
you know
was
how it is. Yeah.
yeah, that was an actual like thought that went into it. And you can go to Parliament and walk around and you can walk up to the cliff on the back and it's kind of nice. Also, and they don't have it anymore, but they used to have the Parliament of Cats, which was like 30 feral cats that just lived in the grounds of the Parliament buildings.
Yeah.
They don't have it anymore because the person who took care of them retired, so they like parceled out the cats, which is kind of sad, but that's the kind of place Canada is. We literally had a cat parliament in addition to the regular parliament.
Anyway, yeah, no, and it's true. I mean, it's Ottawa is an interesting place.
Yeah.
As I said, they make, I mean, there was this one funny book that came out, one of these comedic histories of Canada, and
Right.
about how Queen Victoria took a dart and threw it at a map of Canada, and that's where it landed. Yeah, it's very sort of, yes, as I say, it's very in some ways convoluted, because I mean there was also the problem of Upper Canada and Lower Canada, and that's why, and so the fight was also that was going on was between, say, Montreal and Quebec, Montreal and Toronto, or, well, not so much Quebec City became the seat of the Quebec Parliament, and you know, so Ottawa is sort of a happy
Oh, no,
medium
it
between.
is fair to say that Ottawa is a
Yeah.
negotiated point
Yeah.
because the other two, Montreal, quite a reasonable place for a capital, and Toronto,
Yeah.
both were easy to attack and both would show favoritism versus Anglos or Francophones.
Yeah, Montreal
And
versus.
whereas Ottawa is a border town. Like it is literally the metropolitan area. I mean, if we included Quebec, it like adds another third, well, not a third, but it adds another quarter to the population because so many people just go back and forth across the bridges every day to work or go home. Like it is really it is a city of both provinces. Everything in the city is in both French and English, you know?
Yes.
It's the one truly bilingual, officially bilingual city in Canada.
Yeah,
It's the
other
one
than,
place we take
yeah.
it seriously.
Well, I guess New Brunswick is also
Oh, you're right,
officially
New Brunswick, you're right.
bilingual.
Yeah. It is
Yeah,
extremely bilingual. That's
and the
true.
federal government, I was just
By the
explaining
way,
that,
that is the most
yeah.
Ontario thing about me. Frequently forgetting New Brunswick exists. It's bad. I
Yeah.
do. I really do.
We've even driven through it
Oh
to
yeah,
go to
it's
Nova
true.
Scotia. You have to
But just the fact that like
drive.
just the fact that we think of Nova Scotia as a sorry, New Brunswick as a place you drive through really
Yeah.
tells you all you need to know about what Ontarians are like.
I'm sure that there are more people go to New Brunswick from Maine, because Maine and, oh, I mean, it's like Vermont and Maine
Maine and
and
New
all of
Hampshire
those
all share
places.
a border with New Brunswick.
Like New Brunswick is just you can
You can walk there. Yeah, there's no.
well, yeah, they have they look, we've got a town in Quebec, and not it's not Quebec. Where is it? What is it? Anyway, between Canada, that the main street straddles, one half of the main street is Canada and the other half is the
Oh, yeah.
US.
No,
It's
like.
very problematic when, and that was part of the problem when 9/11 happened, right? Is
Yeah,
that
we're
they,
gonna
you know,
close down all these border
all the
towns.
borders, t no, all the borders are supposed to be closed, and every time
Yeah.
you go into another country, you're supposed to. And these
Show
people,
your
of course,
passport and
have.
blah, blah, blah. Yeah. No, they have lived an entire lifetime of just freely crossing the
It's
border.
one town. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's just one town. I mean, in some ways, Sault, Michigan is probably hurting worse than, I think Sault Ste. Marie is the only border town that the Canadian border town is bigger than the American.
Yeah.
Of all of the other, like places that have, for example, Windsor and Detroit are
Oh
border
yeah,
towns
exactly.
with the river, right?
Usually, you're
For
right.
us, it's
Usually
the
the
river.
American side. Well, no,
Yeah.
Vancouver, Washington is smaller than Vancouver, British Columbia.
Well, technically, Vancouver, though, isn't a border town.
No, but it is.
You
It's
have to
pretty, you're
drive
right.
away from it. What I'm talking about is
Is
like we've
ones
got.
where half the town is on one side of the river and half the town's on the other side of the river, like when
I
Windsor and
mean, our
Detroit.
towns are both named the same.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, I mean, it's no, I mean, at least Windsor and Detroit have two different names, right?
Fun fact, when you
And
hear in the song
Ogdensburg?
Don't Stop Believing,
Yeah.
South Detroit, not a real place. South Detroit is Windsor, Ontario.
Yeah, anyway, Ogdensburg. Do anybody, is Ogdensburg the town across from Cornwall?
I'd have to check. I think so. Yeah.
I can't remember. We used to go shopping there all the time when the
Canadian
Canadian
dollar got nice and powerful.
got really powerful, right? And then going, so we used to just drive down and shop. When from Ottawa, you would drive, it's an hour to Cornwall, and then you'd go in,
Right
across the
across the
river and
border,
go
and there's
to
malls right there.
malls right there and all the cheap stores that you could
Yeah.
buy stuff in to boot, right? I still have
Oh,
hats upstairs, but
yeah.
you know, yeah, it is. It's just like saying, like, Montreal isn't really a border town either.
No, not at
You know, it's
all.
very close, but
Ah, Montreal, as I always think of it, as New York City's Tijuana. That's what it was back during Prohibition.
oh my
It was
God.
New York City's Tijuana. It's where all the rich people went to party and do stuff they couldn't do in America. There's
Yeah, it
a
was, yeah, it's
oh the
funny.
mob
It's
yeah
still.
just the degree to which the mob runs Montreal.
Well, they, yes, they do have their mob killings and
Oh
everything
yeah,
else.
it's
You know?
fascinating. No, honestly, the story of Montreal is incredible. But you know, there's plenty of TV shows about that that I may recommend this week. Ooh. But anyway, yes, the week did, as much as we don't want to talk about it, the week in politics did happen.
Yes.
A
Oh.
giant newspaper article, and it's like, this is, I guess, the corruption and the fall of the American, public and their claims to have any kind of a moral code is like every 3 days we get a blockbuster, or every 3 days to a week, to sometimes 2 weeks, we get a blockbuster article about how Trump is not just the worst president in American history, he's just a completely incompetent human being who you would be disgusted if you had to spend any time with. And yet, all of these stories, like, it doesn't move the needle at all.
Well,
And
or as one Harvard professor said, Trump is not a dictator. He only plays one on TV, but he's not. He only,
true.
oh, excuse me, but then again, right? He certainly. It's yeah. I don't know. I mean, I look at this and this week. I mean, I again, I would turn on, right, something, and I would just go for 5 minutes, and I going, I can't take this.
Yeah.
I can't take this. I can't. All of the fighting, like, this is, you know, we talk. I actually heard somebody say, I think somewhere, about heading for a civil war.
Yeah.
But I mean, I bring up the fact that, you know, on the podcast that was yours, you know, that our podcast may go on forever because it will not be the quarantine special, it'll be the Civil War
War
special,
specials every
you
week.
know, every Sunday.
I'm just checking in on the
But
news from the Second American Civil War.
I mean, what are you
Well,
going?
by the way, third, if you count all of those times the corporations went to war with the unions back in the 10s and 20s. That might technically be the Second Civil War.
Well, except that, yeah, it didn't affect the broader.
That's true, in the way
It
the original Civil
affected,
War
like,
did.
I mean, everybody needs to go and watch. We've suggested this before, Matawan
Yep.
and Harlan County, if you really want to see. But watch Matawan and then go and research the history of it.
Oh, yeah.
But the one thing I was thinking about this week, as I'm looking at all of this, you know, I mean, there's the whole thing with Justice Ginsburg. There's the whole thing now with the new one that they're going to push through, and of course they can do it if they want to. It's going to change the face. I tried to explain this to somebody. Look, it's going to change the face whether Trump gets elected or not.
Yeah.
When you've got this kind of a Supreme Court, and then you're stuck with this big problem. But I'm not even going to go there. It just means that you have to be sure to make your legislation, if the Democrats sweep in the fall, you have to make sure your all of your legislation afterwards is bulletproof. It's, so that very few things go to the Supreme Court, and
Well,
it's
they
a bunch of
actually
stuff
have,
like that.
if the Democrats sweep it all, right? Someone posed a very good solution to this problem that I heard, and I'm like, well, that actually sounds perfect. And the answer is, make the Supreme Court nonpartisan. And that may sound difficult, but the plan that people have put out is quite simple. 27 judges. Democrats get to nominate 13, Republicans get to nominate 13, and then they have to agree on the 27th judge, right? The 27th judge has to get unanimous votes, or there is no 27th judge, right? And then the idea is they get broken up to at the start of every Supreme Court session. You break them up into three groups of nine judges, right? And it is just randomly assigned. So you never know which group of the nine judges your case is going to get to. And any political case, right? Any political case, like any case affecting elections, would have to be seen by all 27 judges. And any case that has a that is set to overturn a precedent would have to be seen by all 27 judges to ensure that a full balance of the court gets it looked at. And I'm like, that actually sounds pretty fair.
Well, it certainly sounds it would be less burdensome, and it
Oh,
wouldn't.
absolutely.
Well, you don't even have to have it. All you have to have is nine more judges, and and then a 19th,
Oh no,
right?
but the reason they
Anything,
said they suggest oh no.
27?
Yeah, the reason they suggest 27 27 judges, and I found this very interesting, is that quite simply, A, with that many judges, each individual judge isn't that important. So you make it so the individual judges themselves aren't vitally important characters. And B, this is the key part, America, and this is something people haven't been talking about, is they put in the whole nine judge thing 150 years ago. America has grown in size almost tenfold since then. America just needs more judges. There are currently nowhere near enough judges in America to deal with the amount of federal cases that come up. The reason you hear that about lawsuits and challenges to laws sitting on a docket for 6 years is because there just aren't enough judges. Because they've never bothered to, they haven't expanded the federal court in like 50 years.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, well, no, you're right. And it's like I'm trying to think because we have our Supreme Court, but they changed, they made a push. They've always tried to keep the court relatively balanced so that your judges come from different parts of the country, like the West, the East, the Central, and stuff like that.
Oh, and the
And
final
they've
change
made
to this
it.
rule, by the way, the final change to
Pardon?
this rule,
Oh,
the final
okay, in
rules change
America.
they suggested in America was no one who has ever worked in politics can be a Supreme Court judge.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah,
Yeah, and
that
like,
would be,
that would help a lot. So, like, Scalia couldn't have been a judge because he was, he was a political activist before he became a judge. So, yeah. And that would be the other thing. So on both sides, Republican and Democrat, no one who has ever worked in politics could be a Supreme Court judge. And, oh, the other thing was, you have to have been a federal judge for at least 5 years. So none of this nonsense where it's like you grab someone who's super right wing out of law school, make them a judge for the first time in their life, and then 1 year later they get to be on the Supreme Court, which, by the way, is what we're dealing with this week.
How long she, but she was a federal judge, though.
For a year and a half. Trump installed her as a judge back in 2018. Yeah, no, she was a law professor.
No,
She
I
was just
know at
a
Notre
right-wing
Dame.
law professor at Notre Dame,
Yeah,
right?
well, Catholic. She was a Catholic law professor at Notre Dame.
It's the same thing.
Well,
I know.
no, don't say that because there's there. I mean,
I
after
know.
all you have to do is look at New York.
That's true. There are plenty of left-wing Catholics. It is very silly of me to tar them all with the same brush. But she's in, I mean, she's in some, you know, crazy secret society Opus Dei type thing.
Well, I'm a, well, no, I mean, my first thought was, okay, she was raised within a parish that was hit with Opus Dei and is an Opus Dei.
They call themselves Catholic. People of the Prayer. Oh, no, People of Praise. People of Praise.
Or whatever.
And
they're Opus
Dei. Do you
want to
know how crazy? Oh, no, they're essentially Opus Dei. But, you know,
they
they're
became,
not.
They became, it was, wasn't this Pope, it was the last Pope that finally made them an order because they'd been trying to become an order for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And the papacy refused to acknowledge them until until we got John Paul II. He was, I don't know why people, anyway, I'm not going to get into.
I can tell you why people are so fond of him. Because he got shot by an anarchist, and then he, like, went to see the anarchist and, like, forgave him and hugged him when the guy was teary with him. That's why people like John Paul II.
Yeah,
because
well,
he had this amazing response to getting shot.
Yeah.
But that's it. Like, the rest of his actual moves as Pope were horrific. Like, all of the child molestation cover-ups were under him.
Well, yeah, there were ones before them. But no, I mean, between him and then Ratzinger, who then became Pope after John Paul II.
Ratzinger. Ugh.
Who ran the Congregation for the Defense of the Faith, as the Inquisition is now called. And
I do like the idea that it's technically still the Inquisition, which
it is.
No, it's technically the exact same, you know, working group, or if you want to call it a think tank or working group or whatever, but it's the same thing, organization that was the actual Inquisition. They never shut down. They just changed their name.
Yeah.
And they don't burn people at the stake anymore.
Yeah, and they don't burn people at the stake, but they can certainly, I know a number of priests who certainly had their problems with the rebranded the Inquisition.
Yeah.
In certainly in the 80s and stuff like that, and it started in the 70s. And the problem with the child molestation issue is that generally speaking, most of these priests didn't do anything heretical. They may have done something unethical, but they didn't do anything heretical.
No.
And it's only heresy that's going
that
to
get you kicked out
of priesthood. And besides, it's all
only saying you're okay with gay people that's going to get you kicked out of the priesthood.
Well, are you going to be gay?
Or being gay yourself.
Now, you
gay. Mean, you can be gay as long as you don't do any gay actions. They're
well,
very clear
it's
about
not
that.
Even that. It's not even that. You can't even really say you're gay.
That's true.
Because remember, you know, it's a
being
sin.
An openly gay choice. Role model. Yeah, it turns you into a role model, which is being openly gay and a positive figure in people's lives is an act of, you know, political advocacy in the church's eyes.
Well, no, it's not an act. No, it's an act of sinful act. It's a sinful act. It's not a political act. It's a sinful act.
I
they
think
may talk
a
about it being
act,
politics.
Right.
Okay, look, I have to, I mean, this is, people want to sometimes turn that, I mean, all religious systems are also political systems. I mean, I grant you that, et cetera, blah, 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 blah. But the point is that it is that you are still in a state of sin because nobody has said it's not a choice.
Right.
Nobody has said that if you're gay, it's because you were born that way. God made you that way.
Mm-hmm.
And until that happens and until humani vitae gets massively shifted and rechanged, there's a whole bunch of issues. You're never going to see a female priest and stuff like that.
Oh my God, that was the funniest thing. So I was watching this episode of Father Ted, right?
Oh, it's so
funny.
It's
a wonderful show. And so there's a live audience for Father Ted, right?
Yeah.
And there's a line in there that's like, I listened to it, and it's only because you've told me about all of this and you've educated me on this that I know that it's actually very funny. But it's like, it's, I guess, such an obscure joke, right, that no one in the audience even realizes it was a joke. So Father Ted is there in somebody in another priest's apartment, and they're going over his library. And so the priest picks up, "Oh, look, it's my copy of Humanae Vitae. Sometimes I pick this up and flip through it to think about how far we've come." Exactly, right? Because guess what? Everybody's, the church is exactly as restrictive as it was then. But no one in the audience knows it's a joke, and the line just falls flat. But they didn't cut it out of the episode because, like, it's a show poking fun at Catholicism, so you've got to be accurate in the way you poke fun at Catholicism.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, nobody
anyway,
even
it
knows
was.
it's a joke.
I mean, that is so funny because so
Yeah.
little changed. I mean,
Of course.
as I always said about Vatican II, I mean, for those Catholics listening, what I used to say about Vatican II was, look, they changed. They didn't change the guts. They, you know, you didn't go and change the critical stuff. You made a lot of changes, like allowing people to have mass in the vernacular instead of in Latin,
Yep.
and nuns didn't have to wear the big heavy robes anymore. And there was all sorts of things, and there was some theological shifts. There were some theological shifts, but not enough to make what I would call, you know, I mean, Opus Dei, for example, thinks of Pope John the 23rd, who was the Pope when Vatican II went on, as sort of the Antichrist. And there is two wings of the church. I did on my blog that I really don't do much anymore. There is a review of a book on basically on the split. It's a short little book. It's an excellent little book. But now I didn't think we'd be talking about this, so I
I
don't
know. Well, but I
remember.
mean, it's just, I know it's a weird thing to bring up, but the fact that, like, it's her entire, the Republicans' entire pitch for this woman is that she's a devout Catholic. So it's worth talking about what it means to
Yeah.
be the kind of devout Catholic that
Well,
she
the
is.
kind of Catholic she is,
Yes.
because there are lots of devout
Of
Catholics who
course.
are who are not are just the opposite of
For
that.
example,
And
Joe Biden.
yeah, Joe Biden is a
Never misses
devout
church.
Catholic.
Never misses church. He is as Catholic as they come, and he's personally against abortion, but he's not going to force his beliefs on the rest of the country. He's not going to say everyone has to be my kind of devout Catholic. And by the way, just for the
It's
record,
for God
everybody,
to
if you,
decide.
yeah, exactly. FYI, in case you've heard this in the news that her organization is what The Handmaid's Tale is based on, that's hyperbole. No. The fact is, and I know it's kind of confusing, because women in the organization are called handmaids, and they are the exact kind of extremist right-wing church that The Handmaid's Tale was based on, but it wasn't specifically based on them. But, and this is the fun part, in 2018, because of the TV show, they stopped calling themselves handmaids.
Yes, because the
There
yeah,
was an
because
uncomfortable similarity between their belief and the show, their beliefs
and
and the show.
the show, yeah.
No, but we all know The Handmaid's Tale was based on oh God, what's her name? Oh, this is so embarrassing.
Phyllis Schlafly.
Phyllis Schlafly, thank you. Yeah,
Of
Phyllis Schlafly, who we've
course.
talked about on the show before. No, but we all know it was based on her and her church. It's just an uncomfortable coincidence that these people are call themselves handmaids.
Use
Yeah.
that particular
I
terminology.
mean,
Yeah.
again, they believe all the things the Handmaid's Tale people believe, but it was
Well,
not
not
specifically
well,
based
not
on that.
exactly, because after all, look at Barrett. She's a judge,
She
right?
is.
And she's so it's
In any
to
oppressive
some
regime,
extent.
you have to have a few token members of the oppressed class to
Yes.
front things. It's
Yes.
the Uncle Tom th syndrome,
As they
except
would
with
call it,
women.
yes,
Yeah.
except for women, yes.
Yeah.
And it is very peculiar sometimes when
Oh,
you
totally.
think about it. But yeah, it I don't know. I can only hope that we don't ever, that those people, just to don't gain control in Canada.
God, yeah. Christian dominionists.
Yeah, and what happens is it was so funny because this week, let's just do a little more Canadian stuff because American stuff is so freaking depressing.
It's been depressing this week, yeah.
So our prime minister went and gave a speech. Now, I teach on Tuesday nights. I miss all the political speeches. I'll miss the debate, the whole thing, right? I'm lucking out this year. Okay?
Yeah, you're not going to get home until the election's over, until the polls are closed, hopefully. Half of America.
Yeah, half of it will be finished. But anyway, right?
For the record, the speech he's talking about is something called the throne speech. If you don't live in Canada.
Well, no, they did a throne speech and then
talking about the throne speech. You're talking about the other one. I'm sorry.
No. He did the throne speech. Yes. And then
just to let people know what a throne speech is, once a year, the Prime Minister of Canada has to give a speech theoretically to the Queen, explaining the government's priorities for the next year so the Queen can weigh in. The Queen doesn't weigh in. No. It's just a formal statement of principles. It's our equivalent to the State of the Union address. In case you haven't heard of it, that's what it is.
Anyway, so he was on. Yeah, he had to do the budgetary thing, right?
Yeah.
So we have basically right now we have the Liberals, the Conservatives, the Bloc Québécois, and the Green Party, and the NDP.
You left NDP till last.
Yeah. Well, the NDP, it's up to them whether the government falls or not.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, I mean, my laugh for the week was, first of all, the leader of the Bloc Québécois and the leader of the Conservatives are both quarantining because they've got COVID. So, you know, I mean, that was enough of a laugh, even though
not
it's
a huge shock based on the it's terrible, and I do hope they both don't have, like, I hope they both, if they have it, come through just fine. But you know, they were exactly who was gonna be at risk. Come on,
yeah,
just their beliefs and their priorities. Of course, it was gonna be them.
Yeah. So then, what happens, right? Is that it turns out that Erin O'Toole, who is the Conservative leader. He actually, you know, people were saying, yeah, well, you know, he said this and this. I said, not that he would have probably said anything different. I'm not saying that. But I said, he went and he actually did his speech. He taped his response to the throne speech before he even knew what was in it.
You son of a.
Yeah, he had no idea what was in it. He did his response to the throne speech, and you're going, oh, okay.
I didn't watch it. It's just generic, ridiculous talking points, I assume.
Well, I assume so.
He recorded it before this.
Yeah, he even recorded it before. And then the deputy leader of the opposition, then, did respond to the throne speech itself,
the arrogance of thinking that you don't even have to know what's in the speech to craft your response. I mean, that's like, I mean, he's officially like the Clarence Thomas of politicians. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Canadian. But no, that's what happened this week.
I had not heard that. That's disgusting.
Well, it's pretty... You know, I'm sort of sitting here going, yeah, so what else?
Par for the course. Yeah.
Yeah. Par for the course. That was our thing. The funny thing was, he went also on and talked to, you know, and somebody was saying this morning on one of the comedy shows that was on the CBC this morning, and they were all talking about it. But this, the one comedian says, well, you know, I found it kind of soothing and comforting, those dulcet tones, and I'm cracking up. Yeah, because you know, it's just basically what it is, of course, is just the opposite of what's going on in the U.S. Yeah. That you have, you know, it, you know, I mean, was it a great speech or whatever, but the point is that you're trying to keep people
calm and centered and with their eyes on the right priorities.
With their eyes on the right priorities. And he said, well, you know, the big line was, well, you know, we're not going to be able to have our normal Thanksgiving, which for us is in October, yeah. The second Monday in October.
Yeah.
So we're not going to have to be able to do that, but maybe we'll be able to do Christmas. Going, oh my Lord. It's such a relief.
It's heartwarming. Yeah.
Compared to what's coming out of the US right now.
Oh yeah. Where like, and I mean, that was the other big news this week, which we're not going to go too far into because everyone's already heard everybody talk about it. Trump says he won't leave office if he's voted out of office.
Well, yes.
Well, and
it has.
He hasn't
well,
been
of course,
impeached.
if it's fair, but who's going to decide if it's fair?
Well, no, he specifically said, if it's fair, I will win. He said the only condition in which he will believe the election is fair is if he wins it.
Yeah, that's basically.
That is no, is. Not basically. He did say that. He said, if we throw out all the fraudulent ballots, then obviously I'll win. So there won't be a transition of power. That is what he said. Meaning, any situation in which he loses, he is going to call fraudulent and he is going to refuse to leave. Now, there are two things that you don't have to worry about that make it so you don't have to panic too much. A, Trump is a liar and a coward who, whenever he's confronted, immediately backs out. Like, he backs down from everything all the time. He's a coward who, like, does not have the courage of his lack of convictions. He just doesn't. He's a ridiculous baby who, I mean, the man literally is famous for the whole you're fired thing. He literally can't fire people.
Like, yeah. He literally, well, okay. Yeah.
He has other people fire people for him because he can't deal with the drama of actually having to fire someone.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a fact, right? So this is, so he might just cop out. Like, he might not go through with this. The second thing is, there is no way the army's on his side. And you can only illegally hold power in a country if the army is on your side. That's just how coups work. And the army, there's good reason to believe the army is not on Trump's side. They don't like him. They hate this guy. They think he's been using the army in the stupidest possible way. He's been cutting funding from things they wanted to do. To do stupid, pointless things like the border wall. He insults generals all the time. They don't like that he talks that way about the war dead and thinks all soldiers are idiots because they became soldiers rather than going out and making money. So it's like, the army hates this guy. So the idea that they would back him in a coup is a little far-fetched.
Yeah.
So
we
got that going for us.
It's well, what I'm just, you know, I was thinking, I mean, the thing that I was thinking about in this is I said, so, you know, I don't know whether this, I'm sort of here going, I don't know if I want to go into it. I said to somebody, it was just yesterday we were talking, there are a number of reasons why it ended up coming up, but I'm going, yeah. And I said, well, I said, do we say that Trumpism is no longer a cult, but it has already moved into a sect or a church?
I mean, I think, is it a secular religion? Like, is a religion with no fantastical qualities, no supernatural elements to it?
Well, I don't know. Like, I would have to think, well, no, here's the point. There is something that we talk about in the business of the scientific study of religion,
yeah,
when we're doing all of this stuff. That people are generally speaking these days. I don't even bother going to the AAR anymore because it's really hard even sometimes at the
American Academy of Religion,
the American Academy of Religion or the Society of Biblical Literature, because there are just so many of these biblical fundamentalists that you can't even have a conversation. But that's another story, a whole different story. And I'm just tired of always this lack. When you study it and you look at how religious systems start and what they need and the rest of it, I think, yeah, I mean, you can call it, we call them civil religions.
Yeah.
So that they don't do they or do they not have to have a
ideology.
supernatural element?
Or
That's
even
a
an
real
ideology.
question.
I would
Yeah.
say even any kind of a guiding principle. There's not even any guiding principle to Trumpism. Like, you can't say what Trumpism is for except for whatever thing Trump said last.
Yeah, and then he changes his mind. So people actually think that, and bringing it back to Catholicism, it's people think they're believing one thing, and then when you show them the books, and they have to look at the books and go, "Oh, well, it says that." That's why a lot of Catholics became Jehovah's Witnesses and things in other countries. It's
Yeah,
not
because
as
they
big
got
a
to read the
phenomenon
Bible.
around. Well, no, because somebody who was who's a Jehovah's Witness would sit down with the Bible and say, "Well, here's
He
what
can
says
proof
in the
text his
Bible."
way.
And
Yeah, it's called
okay.
proof texting.
Yeah, but it doesn't, well, it's not even proof texting, because the problem is the Roman Catholic Church has weighted tradition as strongly as the
Canon.
text, right? And what happens is it's sort of like the Mormons as well. Tradition plays a big role with the Mormons. Now they, of course, believe that their leader will get direct revelation from God, which is why black Mormons became equal within Mormonism. There are in all of these churches when they have mechanisms for change. Now, but when I was looking at all of this, and I'm going, well, I'm looking at the Trumpism, and it's a little harder to see. It's probably more that if you look at sort of Americanism as the civil religion, because it's not Protestantism, it's not Catholicism, but it does have "In God We Trust" and you on their money, and you have their Pledge of Allegiance, which put God back into it. As I said, the founding fathers, I am sure, are rolling over in their graves. Because they were all deists, which meant that, yes, okay, there was a God, and he did set up the universe, but he hasn't got a damn thing to do with it after that. So,
It's called the watchmaker theory
well, to
of
well,
divine
it when,
intervention. He built a clock, and now the clock's just running, and that's all he did.
yeah, and one day the clock will stop. And that's one of them. That anyway, there's a lot. But when you think about, you can certainly look at sort of this when you start looking for mythology. It's how do you structure up? You have all of this mythology that people believe, and a lot of it isn't the case about
I
the
mean,
United
again,
States.
too, we're not going to make it a, we're not going to do a whole big thing about it, but it
No.
goes back to my statement that Americans think they're good at winning wars.
Well,
And it's
yeah, I
part of the
mean,
mythology of Americanism.
yeah, there's a whole bunch of things, and it's because, of course, they played the critical role in both World War I and World War II.
Yeah.
And there's no question, I'm not going to take that away from them.
Of course not.
But what happens is that it is a country that, well, it was, I hate to even say that, right? But I mean, they believe that the Puritans are the key founding fathers in some ways before America became America, and that the Puritans left England, which is true, because of religious persecution, right? And that is definitely true, but do you know what the Puritans believe? And that has imbued so much of what I would say, the American civil re religion has
This is,
imbued.
by the way, this is the what you're
And
gonna hear with the so there's this old standby in the American right wing where it doesn't happen in other countries for the most part, because most other countries, know how to converse and they have an educated populace. But they're basically generally the left is in favor of tolerism, toler oh my God, tolerism, sorry.
tolerance.
Tolerance and inclusion as a general rule. And so right-wing people, and you may have heard this in your lives, will say, well, if you're so tolerant, why on earth do you not accept the fact that I'm a Nazi? And the fact is, the whole point of tolerance is the one thing you have to be intolerant of is intolerance. And that sounds confusing, but it's not actually hard to wrap your head around because you value tolerance. So you don't value intolerance. And the Puritans are essentially the birth of that concept. They had to leave England because England didn't like how intolerant they were. Because England would not tolerate their intolerance.
Well, yes, and they were being persecuted. I mean, it's not like, and they were definitely being persecuted.
Oh, absolutely.
And there was no question about that. But as I mean, I always quote that from Garrison Keillor's book, that first book, where he talks. Pardon?
Or before Lake Wobegon days?
No, Lake Wobegon days.
Oh, Lake Wobegon days. Okay.
Okay, where he's telling all of these stories, right? And he talks about his ancestors, the 12 Puritans who come over on the ship, and by the time they get to the other side of the Atlantic, they've split into three separate religious groups, you know. And he thinks that it's now going to happen again. Because there's his uncle and his dad, and it's getting really down to these issues of grace. As I said, one of my friends gave me this, you know, grace. What's it called? Saving grace, right? And there's something. For those of you who come from that background, you'll understand the term saving grace. But it's a little girl down in a well, and she's being saved. It's a print. It's adorable. But anyway, somebody gave it to me because I was telling this story in my class, trying to explain saving grace. But he was talking about saving grace in Lake Wobegon days, about in their family, because they were coming to this. They had originally split from the bigger congregation, like their group had split from the bigger congregation over the issue of whether men or women could wear slacks, right? Pants.
Yeah, and
because the Bible says no. Well, yeah, but you know, it's an interpretation, right? And it's actually how they break down the Supreme Court into literalists or originalists, you know, and then people who say, yeah, but times change, you know. So he says, and he's terribly, terribly concerned that they're going to split again over this issue of saving grace. So it's, and these things can tear people and groups apart.
Oh, absolutely.
And what happens with, like, America has been this big, it reminds me of the Roman Catholic Church. Like, I'm beginning to see more and more that this reminds me more of this massive hardcore dissent that happened, you know, in the Reformation period in the 16th century, you know. And as I've talked about this before, you know, and I can watch this, and I read this line of Martin Luther's, you know, where he had to say, here I stand, I can do no other, right? And this starts, basically, is this push to make the revolution, then the Reformation, then really takes off. Now, he was not the only one. There were all sorts of other people around, and it was in the air. And what I would say is, what you've got is this split that's in the air now, right? That in America, it gets so big, and there are so many different ways of looking at this. And then people have an assumption about their place and about the justice system in the world, in their world, in their American world, right? And they're being confronted now with all of these massive abuses. And you could watch it. I mean, it's not like I am not completely sitting here going, oh my God, how this happened. I've been saying this for quite a long time. You can watch it happening. You could watch it slowly but surely happening, and people didn't want to see it. And that's partly cognitive dissonance, and it's the justice. And I can remember arguing this with you know, someone over sort of a little bit over the internet, and going, that, you know, you don't have the Weimar Republic problem because you've got the court system and everything else in the states, and their constitution is different. But I'm watching it and going, well, yeah, you could stack those courts, except that, again, you have people like Neil Gorsuch who all of a sudden moved to the other side
On a
over
couple
some
of
court
important
ruling.
issues.
And then
Yeah.
you even had Kavanaugh and Gorsuch both move to the wrong side on some issue over the last year, right? So, or the last 8 months,
By
10
wrong side,
months.
she means against Trump.
Yeah, against the Trumpian position. So, I mean, there is hope. And I mean, this woman, I will say this about Barrett, is that when she was asked about in 2016, which is interesting that Trump didn't, I don't know how he saw that, because, and I guess they would have seen it in a positive way, but she basically didn't weigh in. She was asked about the whether or not, you can put in a judge in an election year, and she said, well, there's nothing. She's a she's an originalist,
Literalist, an
or
originalist,
what?
yes,
An originalist, I think they call
that's
them.
what they call them. Yeah,
Okay, she's an originalist, and she said there is
well,
nothing in the
nothing in the Constitution about
Constitution
it.
either way,
Yeah,
is what she said.
and that's true. I mean, the Constitution only says there has to be a Supreme Court. It doesn't even say how many people there should be on it.
That's
There were
right.
six for a while, then there were eight, then there were
Yeah.
nine, and it's kind of been sitting at nine.
So
And
there's nothing there. So there's nothing to stop, for example,
the
well,
27
what
thing,
happened with Canada's Senate, right? Where Brian Mulroney went and stacked the Senate,
that was
right?
pretty
He just
funny. He
he
had some
added.
terrible economic ideas. And he's like, and the Senate would not pass them.
Yeah.
And so he just added a ton of people to the Senate.
Yeah, he just added a whole bunch of new senators from
It was funny.
all the different provinces, and they were all, of course, fans of his particular, the people he appointed to the Senate were all his on his side of the thing, and the Senate passed.
And by the way, they all do this. Famously, when my uncle was running, policy for the Prime Minister of Canada. That's a true thing, by the way. I'm not making that up. That's a real thing that happened. They had just come into power, right? And my uncle was running policy for him. And so I say to my uncle, I know you guys are going to put in a bunch of senators, so maybe kick one of those jobs my way. I mean, I see the kind of people Mulroney appointed. There's no real qualification other than willing to vote for whatever the party who put you in wants you to. And he's like, no, we don't believe in the Senate. We're not going to be putting in any senators. We want to get rid of that as an institution. And I'm like, yeah, good luck with that, Johnny. Tell me that the second you run into any kind of a hassle getting something passed, that you're getting rid of the Senate. And spoiler alert, I didn't get to be a senator, but he did go back on all of his beliefs.
He didn't go back on, he just,
Not
the
all of his
reality of
beliefs.
the
Yeah.
situation
The
was
reality of the
such.
situation is, yeah, like you're not going to completely change the country, so you gotta work within the framework that already exists, and that includes the Senate. And but you can change the form of it. And in the same way, America has to wrap its head around the idea, right, that in the same way, the current look of the Supreme Court is just a tradition. There is no legislation can change it. But America is, again, G.K. Chesterton said it best. America is a country ruled almost entirely by tradition. But as G.K. Chesterton said, all tradition is a democracy where you let dead people vote.
Yeah, I know. Oh, he was such a wonderful writer.
Oh, he was
And
fantastic.
people should go watch if you want to have that will be my recommendation.
Actually, yeah, let's move on to recommendations. We'll talk more. I'm sure there'll be more politics to talk next week.
Well,
Hit us with your
yeah, and
recommendation.
politics, and as and if you wonder why sometimes when we get going on politics, we can, yes, we on
It
all
runs away
sides
with us.
we come from political type families.
Oh, completely.
On both sides of the spectrum, on all sides of the spectrum, it's enough to drive you crazy.
It wasn't a liberal prime minister my uncle was working for.
No.
I'll say
No.
that.
Hardly. Not with your grandfather.
No.
Jeez.
Oh, anyway, hell no. All right.
Let's go back. Yeah, let's do our recommendations.
Please, make your recommendation.
Yeah. Okay, so what I'm going to say is talking about G.K. Chesterton. Everybody should go and read. No, go and just watch. You'll have to do it on your PBS. Father Brown.
Father Brown.
Only
so
because
good.
It is so removed, right? So completely and totally removed from any kind of worldview that exists today. It's sort of, I have a girlfriend who doesn't like watching it because she just doesn't like, I think, the choices they made to make it a kind of hybrid, because of course Chesterton wrote these things in the 20s.
Yeah.
And stuff really early, like back then, but they've kind of set it in a bizarre 50s, but it's not a 50s England. But they're all British, of course. And Father Brown is a Roman Catholic priest.
Yeah.
And he has his little housekeeper who's this older woman, but he's the perfect, if all priests were like this, right, we would have no trouble in the world. However, he's one of those ones, of course, that gets in trouble with the bishop and the powers that be, but not too often. He has his little parish and there's always a murder or something. It's like Father Brown, it's like Midsummer Murders, but with Father Brown.
Yeah.
Right? And the incompetent policeman. and the police have changed over the, you know, who heads it up. And they don't like Father Brown interfering, but he always comes out right. And he always gets the guilty party to confess.
Yeah.
Because God loves them. But God wants them. If they want forgiveness, they have to confess. They cannot have forgiveness. How could God forgive me? Well, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a.
No, it's a fantastic series. I haven't read them. I've only seen the adaptations, and they're wonderful.
Oh yeah, the reading is. I have a collection of all of the little shorts. They're all short stories, right?
Yeah.
And. You know, but to watch it, it's just because it takes you away completely from anything that is here. In fact, it's on tonight at 7 o'clock. So, you know, I'll PVR. No, I'll watch it probably while I'm having supper.
I'm going to do my own related because mine's a little harder to take, but it is definitely related. I'm going to recommend the two movies Antonia Bird made. And they're both incredible. I mean, she did a lot of TV and then TV movies as well. She has sadly passed on, back in 2013. She was a wonderful director and she made the movie Priest, starring Linus Roach, Tom Wilkinson, and of course, Robert Carlyle in 1994. And it's like, Linus Roach plays a priest and Robert Carlyle plays his lover. He's gay. And at the same time, Linus Roach hears in confession that this this teenage girl is being molested by her father.
Yeah.
And it's all about what is the relevance of the priesthood in a modern world, right? Because you've got this guy trying to do the best job he can, but the way the church is structured means he's not supposed to be able to help this child. And at the same time, he's doing a pretty good job as a priest, but if anyone found out he was gay, he would immediately be thrown out of the priesthood. It's a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
Incredible performances. From beginning to end, it is just like one of the best movies of the year that it came out. And it's like one of my favorite movies up there with Doubt about Catholicism and abuse. Like it's that good. It's Doubt level good.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm going to recommend her other movie at the same time, which is Ravenous, which is a lot more fun. but what happened there was the director was, they were making this movie. It starred Robert Carlyle as a cannibal who, I'm not going to do it's about the frontier and cannibalism, and Guy Pearce plays a monstrous cannibal. And It's incredible, right? But what happened was the director, like, they had this wonderful script and everybody loved it. Everyone signed on to do it. And the director was doing a terrible job. And the staff, the entire cast got together and went on strike for the studio to fire the director. And Robert Carlyle phoned up Antonia Bird, who he had just starred in, like, he had done TV stuff with her. He had just starred in Priest. And he's like, could you just come and direct this movie I'm in? And she's like, well, you know, I'm going to have to put my own spin on it. He's like, yep, but you're good at your job, so I trust you. And she turned it into this movie that is, it is about religion. It's about, yes, it's about homosexuality as well. It's about American exceptionalism. It's about the frontier. Like, it's about the whole American project in the West. While at the same time, just being a movie about a crazy cannibal who kills people.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
But like, it's an amazing movie. I think it's got Damien Dark in it, too.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. You're right. Oh, God. How am I blanking on his name? I love him.
God, who the hell?
Oh, God. I'm just trying to look it up. Neil McDonough.
Yeah.
Yes.
Damien Dark, David Arquette.
David Arquette's in it. Jeffrey Jones is in it. Jeremy Davis. It's an amazing cast. And hilariously, Neil McDonough, in the least subtle thing ever, I just looked it up. His character is named Private Reich. Lest subtlety keep her from making the point. Oh, no, it's an amazing movie. It's hilarious. It's extremely violent. It's one of the best horror satire comedy things ever made. Mm-hmm. And it's just an incredible movie. And her experience working with the studio was so awful.
Yeah.
She refused to work on a movie again for the rest of her life. She just went back to television and she was like, I'm fine. I'll make TV movies. That'll be my work.
And she did Cracker after that.
She did episodes of Cracker. Spooks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She worked on MI5. Like, she never stopped working. She was always, like, she was a great director. She never stopped working.
Yeah.
But she luckily was nice enough to come and give us, you know, two incredible movies.
Yeah.
Like, two truly incredible movies that I would recommend anybody watch. Again, you have to have a strong stomach.
It's Ravenous. It's about cannibals.
It's about a cannibal. You have to have a strong stomach for it, but it's absolutely worth it. And Priest, be ready to be depressed, but it's one of the best movies about the modern church.
Yeah.
Like, it's just an incredible movie. All right. So I guess that's that. If you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. You can join us back here on Thursday as we continue our trip through season 11 of Criminal Minds, where you get to hear us talk a lot about how we think Aisha Tyler is a murderer.
But anyway.
That's a weirdly large percentage of the season, is us being sure that Aisha Tyler is a serial killer. So that's a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed, did you figure out before Sheila said it that the first episode of season 11 was a re-record? I don't think you would have. Did you figure it out first that we were pretending to have just not already recorded that episode once? Maybe. But yeah, join us back here for that. And of course, next week we'll be back here to help put the week into context as best we can.
Yes. I mean, I'm not sure we did a really good job of that part of today's show.
No, but this week has been rough.
It was just, last week was just too much.
Even by the standards. And I mean, and again, like you said, I was on vacation and it was still a rough week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a rough one. All right, so we'll see you back here next week. But until then, be sure to, if you're listening to this on some sort of app or podcatcher, be sure to rate and review it, because that is how people find the show. We'll see you back here next week. But until then, I'm going to say au revoir.
Have a good week.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.